This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight in College Park, it feels like one of those nights. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, there is no better environment than College Park, Xfinity Center, or way back in the day, Kohl Fieldhouse, for a huge Maryland basketball game. And it feels like one tonight with Michigan State in town. Terps are 3.5-point favorites in the game tonight at home against 8th-ranked Michigan State. Maryland's ranked 16th. They are on a roll. They are playing at a very high level right now. It's probably the best we've seen since 2020, if not since 2002. That's not an exaggeration when it comes to how good they are offensively. Tonight on the call right here on your home for Maryland basketball, the Team 980, Johnny Holiday, Chris Nockey, and the Wizard, Walt Williams, will be on the call. 6 o'clock pregame, 6:30 tip. Before we get started on the game tonight, I watched something the other day. I don't know if you've watched it. It's the We Beat the Dream Team, HBO. It's about the Dream Team when they lost the scrimmage to the select players in 1992. You know, that team included, like, they brought in Weber and Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley and Rodney Rogers and Eric Montross, Allen Houston. Have you seen that documentary yet?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Here's what I was wondering. Did you try out for that team?
I did not. I don't know why I wouldn't have, but I did not try out for that team. I don't know if they had a trial process, rather than just selection.
That's ridiculous when I think about it, because it's actually a very good documentary, Denton. It's worth watching. It's called We Beat the Dream Team. It's on HBO. It's the story of the college players that scrimmaged the original pro players, Magic, Bird, Michael, etc., that 92 Dream Team, and they beat them in a scrimmage. And as I was watching it, I don't know what made me think of, like, I'm thinking, well, there's no Maryland player, but why wasn't Walt? You know, we were on probation at the time, you know, coming off the Bob Wade situation. So we're on probation, and Walt Williams, most of you know, is in many ways he was a young man at the time, significantly responsible for keeping the program afloat during the probation years and making it much easier for Gary Williams to recruit for the team that came off of probation and that ultimately, you know, went on a run of Sweet 16s, Final Fours, and a national championship over a long period of time. But that's interesting, because you were the leading scorer in the ACC in 92, right? That was the year that you had 7 straight 30-point games?
Well, yeah. So, I averaged, I think, 27 a game overall, but even in the ACC, I believe I averaged 30 points a game in against ACC competition. So
right.
Yeah, I never thought about that myself, but you know, when you bring that up, absolutely. I think it was some type of selection process. They certainly didn't have a trial. I was not invited to any trial or anything like that. So,
yeah. I mean, you should have been, but it was probably, Walt, because on probation, remember, that was the season we couldn't even be on TV. You know, your prolific scoring season, I listened to on the radio if I wasn't in College Park for the games. I mean, that's how, you know, rough it got. So maybe that's, I mean, I say this with so much respect and love because you were an incredible college basketball player, and Walt ended up being, you know, a very high draft choice. He was 7th overall in the 92 draft, picked by Sacramento, and had a long NBA career. But if you had played at Carolina, Duke, or Michigan that year, you would have definitely been on that team.
Well, you know what? We did get opportunities to play in a tape delay at midnight on Sunday
right.
sometime.
Yeah. Crazy. All right. You've been watching this team just as long as I've been watching this team. I think, and I said this about 2 weeks ago, I said, I think this team has Final Four potential. What do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you look at them, the makeup, they have multiple perimeter guys who can score from the outside, hit the three, create their own opportunities, create for others. You have two bigs that are dominant inside that can score the basket inside. You can play up-tempo transition offense. You can play half-court offense. You have a kid in Derrick Queen that gives you a dynamic element to your team where he can get rebounds and then push it on a fast break like a point guard. Not only does he handle the ball well, but he can see the floor like a point guard as well. So it takes your transition opportunities up to the next level. And it also makes it so that you don't have to rely on your bench to score when you have so many guys that can, when you're starting lineup, that can put it in a hole. So you more so lean on that bench to come in and making sure that there's no drop off, making sure the defensive intensity is there, even gone to the next level, you know, so the loose balls and things like that. So I think what they've been able to do offensively has been very impressive, and it relieves what the bench has to do offensively normally in situations. So the Terps are just about every game outscored in bench points, but it doesn't really matter because the five, the starting five nullifies that because, you know, the reality is that these guys are, not only do they average double figures, all of them, but they're capable of getting 20-something points on any given night, any one of those five guys. So, they are a real threat to take over games, every last one of them.
Derrick Queen, best freshman since Joe Smith?
Oh, yeah. That dude is just amazing, man. I find myself falling out the chair a lot watching him. His ability to see the floor, his poise. He doesn't get sped up when the defense is aggressive against him. You know, he has that slow motion type of poise game. And, he's just surveying out there. He's making great decisions. And so it's just a matter of time. But when he adds the jump shot to his game, I mean, it's just going to be off the chain then. So the only thing right now at the college level he needs to make sure he's in tune to is just, you know, maintaining focus throughout the whole game. You know, sometimes when the game comes easy to you, like it seems it does to him, you can lose focus and not be in tune to what's happening in the game. And so especially at this time of the year, you want to stay focused and be ready and in tune. So you see it in times where he'll have a game like 27 and 15. But if you look at that game, you'll see in the first 15 minutes, 16 minutes, he might not have scored a point.
I know.
So he's 27 points in a matter of 22 minutes or something like that. It's just amazing, you know. And so, if he can make sure he's focused and zoned in throughout the whole 40 minutes, man, I mean, he's a dominant presence already, but it can absolutely go to the next level.
You know, Kevin said recently, and I had him on the show the other day, that he said if he were white and European, he'd be the number one pick in the draft. the funny thing about that, though, is he doesn't stretch the floor. You know, with his shooting, he doesn't shoot threes, but I think he can shoot threes. What do you think?
Well, yeah, when you look at his form,
right.
He has good. He has good technique, so it's just a matter of time. I think it's just the number of reps. You know, when it becomes your job, you'll see him go to the next level with that. But you make a great point. A guy that doesn't have a jump shot now, you put him at the power forward position and match him with Juju, you think that those two guys are not going to be able to mesh together. It's going to be too bunched up in the lane. But his ability to handle the ball and create. So when guys are lag off of him, he takes up that space, and he has tremendous footwork around that basket. So if you give him that room, he could take up that space, and then he's close to the basket where he can just operate. So he makes defenders push up on him, even though he doesn't have a jump shot to create that spacing that you need to play with two big guys like that.
You know, when you look at this team right now, is there a more important player than Gillespie?
Oh man, he's certainly have a tremendous importance there. Not only him leading the charge offensively and the point, you know, setting up things, but what he brings to the table defensively on the opposing team's point guard and getting them out of sorts and running their offense. He's a tremendous asset in that. Him and Rodney Rice and Selton, I think that they're underrated in terms of what they can do on the defensive end and controlling guys on that perimeter, all three of those guys. But I think Gillespie, you know, what he can do offensively, I think he was underrated coming into the season. I don't think people realize what he can do, how athletic he is, man. I mean, this dude can fly. His handle, he can create and get into that paint area. I want to see his floor vision. I want to see that go to another level. But, I mean, he's adequate. He's a decent floor general as well. And, I mean, when he shoots the ball, I mean, it looks like that jumper is so pretty, man. It looks like it's going in every single time he shoots it. You know, he has that nice, beautiful arc on it. And so, man, he's a tremendous asset. And he's been consistent pretty much all season as well, being able to create, being able to space the floor and hit timely jump shots. He's not afraid of the moment at all.
We're talking to Walt Williams. He'll be on the call tonight with Johnny and Naki, Maryland and Michigan State right here, 6:30, 6 p.m. pregame. Rodney Rice, there was not like a belief when they got him from Virginia Tech out of the portal that he would be as good as he is. I've said in the last couple of weeks, I'm like, I think I'm looking at if he comes back, which he will, hopefully to College Park next year. It's going to take some cash, I would assume. But am I looking at a future first-round pick?
Well, I tell you what, he is a good size. He can handle the ball. He can create his own shots. He can break people down. I don't know if he'll make a living at the two. In the league, he might have had that combo moments where he can play the point and the two, and I think that he can do that. You know, certainly defensively, offensively, it remains to be seen a little bit more creativity off the dribble. But man, he's on his way. The thing that he has is, I mean, he can score at all three levels, but his mid-range game is just sick. You know, and that's the hardest part to stop. When you're shooting the long threes, catch and shoot, you know, you push up on a guy and try to crowd his space. When a guy's going to the basket, you try to make it difficult, ride his hip, help side comes. But when a guy can stop on a dime and pull up, there's no answer for that. You just got to hope that he miss. you know, and he's consistent with that. And I think that's what the separator for him. That's why you got to take a serious look, because this dude mid-range, you know, he brings it. And then after saying all of that, he guards the opposing team's best offensive wing player. So he's a lockdown defender as well, man. And, you know, when you can score like that, he's had a couple of games where he had 20s. And when you can score like that, sometimes it overshadows what you do defensively.
Talking to Walt Williams, have you ever seen improvement? The free throw line's the obvious spot, but overall – the improvement from Julian Reese from where he was his first 3 years and where he is this year?
Oh, man. I mean, the jump from his junior to senior year, I mean, that's like, I mean, a 40-inch vertical right there, leap right there, man. I mean, on so many levels. You talk about his free throw. I mean, that free throw in the past, it looked crazy. And now it's just on a whole new level. It's consistent. He's very comfortable out there. And for that drastic change in your shot to come, not only that change, but it's a natural. You can see he naturally shoots in one motion now. And so that takes a tremendous amount of work to change something like that, your natural shot. So that's just a testament to his work ethic and him zoning in and wanting to get that done. But on another level, you know, his maturity has just gone to another level as well. In the past, a lot of times I walk away from games thinking to myself, you know, Juju was playing with so much anger or upset because somebody was playing hard against him or physical or whatever. You know, this is just normal stuff out here. And it seems like he couldn't catch up to the maturity, the mentality of playing at this physical level.
Right.
But now it's second nature. I mean, he just gets it done. He wants that physicality. I mean, he has fades to the right shoulder, left hooks. He got a little float game now, a little mid-range. I mean, so he's all of these things he did not show at all in the past, and he's showing on a consistent basis in just this one season. You know, so, I mean, you got to take your hat off, man. This dude has made a tremendous stride in just one offseason in just about every aspect of the game.
Selton Miguel's got to be a guy after your own heart, because he's open right when he crosses half court. I mean, there's not a shot he's looked at that he doesn't think he can make, and it's true so far. I mean, don't you feel like at any range that thing's going in?
Oh, yeah, man. It's just those guys are shooting the lights out there from the perimeter, and more importantly, even when they miss, it looks like it's going in.
Right.
So, yeah, man, and Selton has been probably the most consistent guy from the three-point line lately. You know, he had a rough start to the season, so his overall numbers don't reflect what he's been doing as of late. You know, I think that he's a guy, a good size, 6'5 or so, strong. I mean, he can shoot the lights out. Early on, you saw him spot up shooting, going to the driving to the basket to the right a lot. Now, you know, he's pulling up threes off the dribble. You go underneath the screen, he's pulling up. He's getting to the basket with the off a left hand drive. He's pulling up in mid range. So he's really expanded his game and really shown what he can do. And you expected that from him, a guy coming from the league. He came from coming off the bench, leading his team in scoring. You knew that he was a guy that can put the ball in the hole. So the biggest thing that he brings to the table, though, is his leadership. It seems like when he says things out there on the court, the team really takes a hold of it. It seems like they have a different look or a different mentality when he's talking to them. So, you know, he's really surfaced as a vocal leader, him and Julian as well. So those two guys have stepped it up as in terms of being leaders for the team as well.
Terps have won 8 of 9. They are on a roll, haven't lost at home since early November when they lost to Marquette, who at the time was a top 10-ish kind of a team. Does the lack of scoring off the bench concern you?
Nope, not at all. Like I mentioned earlier, I mean, these three guys can literally catch a heater and get 20. You can get 20 from each one of them. You know, that's how much they can score. So they averaging in the teens and things like that. But any given night, each one of them can score 20. It's nothing to be said for Gillespie, Rodney, and Selton hitting three or four threes, you know, any night. In the same night, you know, and when things like that, when the jump shot is falling, and then that gives Juju that room to operate in that paint. And then Derek, you know, he's just a wild card. He does everything out there, pretty much, the mid-range, rebounding, scoring around the paint. So, I mean, I just think these five starters can just score from so many different areas, and they are consistent with it to the point where I don't think you rely on bench scoring like you traditionally would on a team. It's an amazing thing to say, but I think that they can score at a rate that you don't need bench scoring. You can always keep two to three starters in a game at all times, you know, and so you're going to have scoring. Like I said, it's just about when you come off that bench, what is it like defensively? Do they take the team's defensive intensity to the next level? That's their impact, really. So yeah. You don't need the scoring from them. The starters can take care of that.
Couple of more for Walt Williams. We both think that this team's got deep into the tournament potential. What kind of team don't they want to see in a one and done? What's a bad matchup for them?
I don't see the problem. The teams that they've had problems with is if they have one dominant guy, and if the game is close at the end, they've had problems with stopping a dominant wing guy down the stretch if the game is tight. But I mean, you know, I just think that those are anomalies. I mean, you know, you can take care of that by taking care of business throughout the course of the game and not having it come down to one or two plays made at the end of games when a dominant player can take over. And also, they've been playing much better on the defensive end in these last two games ending the season, and I think that's what's leading to them finishing on an 8 out of their last 10. They've won 8 out of their last 10, and I think it's because defensively they've gone to another level. And so, they're looking like they're playing their best basketball of the season right now.
That's interesting that you said that, because I thought the first half against Iowa, when Iowa put up 51, I was thinking, because I think they're a good defensive team too, but I think at times it looks like they just feel like they can outscore anybody, and so they go into those lapses defensively. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I mean, if you look at it in comparison to the previous two Willett seasons.
Yeah, of course.
But I would counter that with, it's a psyche, right, that when you're out there as a player and you know we cannot score, defensively, you know, the sense of urgency, you just go to another level when you know you can't score on the other end. Now, when you can score on the other end, you're shooting it from everywhere, we got guys who can do that thing, you know, psyche-wise. You know, it's not as much of a sense of urgency. Now, we're going to work hard, and we're going to pay attention to where we're supposed to be rotating and give that great effort. But just a natural sense of urgency out there, it is not the same when you know you can't score as compared to, man, we can go down here and get a bucket just about any time. We're going to have a mismatch with somebody. You know, so I just think that sometimes that rear its ugly head at for this team, but overall, I think that they've been solid towards the end of the season and keeping guys in front. Like, you look at that Iowa game. I thought that they were over-helping on the wing, right? And so in the second half, they made that adjustment towards the end of that first half to don't over-help. Don't help unless people need it. You know, stick to your guy. Make sure you're not giving up those draw and kick lanes. Right. And so it was just a fundamental thing that changed right there. And they were lights out. It was more contested shots that Iowa were taking in that second half.
How big of a game is this tonight? How good? I mean, I'm expecting it. You and I both, and Maryland fans know and can kind of feel when the building will be great. I know it's a 6:30 start, and sometimes that hurts the beginning of it. But this is the biggest game they've had in a few years, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. When you can win a game like this, I mean, that is just awesome. You know, so I think that, you know, win or lose, I mean, if you win this game, it'll be tremendous. If you lose, it's not that big of a deal because they've been solid, and they're going to have some other games to finishing out the Big Ten season to make up for it. But just mentally, number 16 against number 8. You know, Michigan State is at the top of the totem pole when it comes to the Big Ten. And so this is a great game. You're at home. You're dominant at home. You're going to have your crowd behind you. So this is a great, great, confident building game for you. And I'm talking about going into the Big Ten tourney and going to NCAA, you know, jockeying for those positions and things like that. This can be a tremendous boost to your confidence and understanding that you can beat a team the caliber of Michigan State. They have, you know, what, 7-8 guys that can score, you know. And so, they bring a different type of challenge to you. Not one I would say that's real dominant, but you know, all of them about the same. You know, there's no real drop-offs in terms of guys who can score the basketball and what they can do out there. So they have about 7 or 8 guys that can all put it in the hole. So it all presents this challenge. But I think the Terps are set to, you know, I'm glad that this game is in a home environment where they've been playing their best basketball. And like I said, I think this can do a tremendous good for their confidence.
One last thing. Do you know, I mean, it's crazy that this is year 11. It's now 11 seasons in the Big Ten since the move to the ACC. Do you miss not having a true rival?
Oh, man, absolutely. I mean, that's what college basketball is all about, you know. Of course you love to see good basketball and great basketball, but it's nothing like the rivalries where you have that real, real hatred for another team. And, you know, the trash talking just go to another level. The anxiety or the anticipation of getting out there, getting the game started. I mean, it just all go to another level for not only the fans, but the players too, the coaches, everyone. And so, you know, those type of games are so spirited, and, you know, you hate to have those type of games fall by the wayside.
You know, I was a guest on another show earlier in the week, and I said that there's never been really a feel for any other team as a rival. We've probably played more big games against Michigan State since being in the league, and maybe Purdue, but we've never had a big, you know, late season game against Indiana, really, not at home anyway. So hopefully it works out tonight. I'll be there. You'll be on the call. Hope to see you. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Absolutely, my man. Good talking to you.
You too. Walt Williams, everybody. He should have been considered for that 92 Select College team. If you haven't seen that documentary, it's pretty good. It's only about an hour long. It's a show documentary, and it's about the scrimmage where the college players beat the Dream Team. There's actually a couple of big reveals in there that I didn't know before. But Walt was certainly good enough to be on that College Select team. He was probably... he probably was the leading scorer in the group among all the players on that team. All right, Kevin Willard's keys to a win next. The NFL's come out with that report card thing. You know, their overall, the NFLPA's overall ranking on the teams and how they treat players and how they treat, you know, players' families and their facilities, etc. Washington's performance improved. We will get to that here shortly. Walt Williams just texted me. The reason that he was not part of that College Select team in 1992 is because he had already been drafted. He got picked in the 92 draft. Leitner was actually on the Dream Team. He was the one college player selected to play on the Dream Team. All of the college select players were class of 93 or class of 94 guys. So that makes sense. Tonight's going to be great. Let me just say, Terps, by the way, are now up to 4.5-point favorites, Denton. So a lot of sharp money on Maryland. I've watched a lot of basketball since football season has ended, and I know you have as well because we've talked a lot about it. I didn't think Michigan State was that great when I watched them a couple of times earlier in the season. They play so hard. They are deep. They are fast. They are aggressive. You know, they've got Jason Richardson's son, Jace Richardson, who's a really good player. They've got multiple players that can score, and they're just aggressive defensively, and they rebound. I mean, that's what every Izzo team does. They just rebound, and they get out, and they try to run. You know, the league has always been more of a grind-it-out, like I've referred to it as kind of a grind-it-out tractor league because of where some of these games are played. But Michigan State has always been the opposite of that. They've always wanted to play with great pace of play, and they always have. You know, Izzo wants to run after missed buckets, made buckets, and certainly off of turning teams over. They've got a very interesting roster. It's a deep roster. They got a kid on their team, number 55, Cohen Carr. He may be among the best athletes in the country in terms of true explosive leaping abilities. He's like 6'4", 6'5". I mean, he's been a highlight reel at times. But Akins and Richardson can really play. Holloman can play. This is a tough matchup for Maryland. Why are they a 4.5-point favorite? Because Maryland's a really difficult matchup. I've been talking about that for, you know, several weeks now. They're really hard to guard. They, you know, Walt just said it. They've got five guys that can go for 20-plus on any given night. That's really impressive. You, at the college level, to have five players that are capable of going for 20-plus in a game, and all five of their starters are capable of that. All five of their starters average in double figures. But Maryland's had multiple leading scorers this year. You know, in games, Rice was their leading scorer in the last game with 22. The game before that, it was Gillespie with 26. The game before that, it was Queen with 24. Two games before that, it was Reese with 24. Miguel's capable. He's gone off three times this year as the team's leading scorer. It is really difficult to guard a team when you've got five guys capable of being the leading scorer on any given night. Now, none of those players come off the bench, and that's been a knock against Maryland. Now, the only way that impacts you when you get to the NCAA tournament because of longer timeouts, television timeouts, is if you get in foul trouble. You're not going to get worn out in a 40-minute game when you're not playing back-to-back. Now, you will in the Big Ten tournament, but I'm talking about the NCAA tournament. You've got at least 2 days between games, sometimes four between games, or longer, sometimes five. If you go a Thursday, Saturday, and then don't play again until the following Friday. That would be 6 days, actually, in between games. The key is staying out of foul trouble, and they do get good defensive performances off their bench. They get good rebounding performances off their bench. They just don't have a lot of scoring. But I thought Walt's point was a real good one. It's like your bench scoring is only important when you go to your bench and you're left without a scorer on the floor. They're never without scorers on the floor. Let's just say they bring in two subs. They still have three guys capable of getting 20 who are on the floor. You know, it's not five in that moment, but it's three. And I think that's one of the reasons when you've watched Maryland, if you have, like I have, and Denton has, I mean, they're capable of going for 90-plus a night. And they are, you know, among the league and country's leading scorers. They're among the league's most efficient offensive teams. They're also one of just six teams that are top 20 in offensive and defensive efficiency. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, or maybe last week. Of the last 22 national champions, 20 have been teams that have finished in the top 20 of offensive and defensive efficiency per the KenPom numbers. And Maryland is one of six teams right now in that category. You know, their ranking in the Associated Press is 16, but their net ranking is 11. They're 15 in KenPom, and a lot of the advanced numbers are in love with Maryland right now. For whatever it's worth, look, it is the tournament. It's one and done when you get there. Anything can happen. They could have an off shooting night. The problem is, are you going to get three guys with off shooting nights? Four guys with off shooting nights? Kind of hard. They can go inside out. They can go outside in. If you run their three-point shooters and they've got three of them off the three-point line, all three of them, especially two of the three, Gillespie and Rice, are capable of playmaking, of you're going to run me off the line, I'm going to go by you, and we are going to play. We're going to break down the defense. We're playing five on four at that point. They can hit mid-range. They can hit floaters. They can get it to the rim, and they can make it easier for players around them. They can go inside out. They can start their offense with Reese on the block or with Queen on the block or at the elbow. They are just a very, very difficult team to guard right now. And every season's different in college basketball, man. The sport is completely different. It's a better game when you get to this point in the season because guys are sticking around longer and playing for longer because they're getting paid. So there isn't the incentive to jump to professional basketball because you're not getting paid at the college level. You've got better players staying for a longer period of time. I thought Kevin Willard's point to me the other day about the game being better in part because you can transfer more than once. Now, fans hate that. I get it. And I don't love the transferring around and not knowing what you have and not being able to grow with players year to year. But what it's done is, you know, if you can transfer more than once, you may transfer down, improve significantly, and now have a chance to transfer back up. You know, Gillespie was at Belmont, and now he's at Maryland. I don't know if this was his second transfer or not, but you have the ability to get players at lower levels to get into Power Four teams when they've become better players and they are older players. And make no mistake, you know, as excited as I am about a five-star like Derek Queen, who has a chance to be the Big Ten Freshman of the Year, he's not going to be the National Freshman of the Year. Cooper Flagg is going to be the National Player of the Year. How good did they look last night, by the way? Not playing a good team, but anyway. But you older teams are the teams that have the best chance in this sport. They are physically mature. They are more mentally mature. And Maryland is an older team. They have a four-year starting center. And then they've got three wing players who have played a lot of college basketball. And they've got one of the best freshmen five stars in the country. I think, you know, Kevin Willard, I had him on. We had him on the show yesterday. Here's what he said about the keys to beating Michigan State tonight.
Really, really two big keys. We got to make sure that we don't turn the basketball over. They are an elite transition offensive team, the best in the country, and they're the best in the country at when you turn the ball over. And we're going to have to rebound. You know, everyone knows Coach Izzo's how great of a rebounding team is. This one's probably as good as anyone I've seen because of how hard they play. They're just every possession they're going, they're crashing the glass. They're big, they're physical. So we got to take care of the ball, make sure we get a shot up on the rim every time, and then we got to rebound.
There you go. Got a rebound against Michigan State. Michigan State will try to bully you. They've done that for years, and this is a team that's no different. They don't have, you know, maybe the superstar talent, but they haven't always had that, and it hasn't mattered. Look, the last time they came, well, it wasn't the last time they came into the building, but with these kinds of stakes, February of 2020, Maryland had just beaten them in East Lansing 2 weeks previous to a game that had massive, buildup. And Maryland had a chance to essentially win the Big Ten regular season title that night. And the building was crazy. College game day was there. And Michigan State jumped out to like an 11-2 lead. Denton quieted that crowd. And it wasn't the same the rest of the night. Tonight has a chance to be one of those special nights at Xfinity. The thing I hate is these 6:30 starts because you get late arriving crowds. But students will be there. Apparently they were, you know, lining up last night to get into this one. It should be great. I like Maryland tonight, in part because they're up to a 4.5-point favorite right now. What was Michigan favored by on Friday night in Ann Arbor? Wasn't it like 2.5 or 3?
I think it was 2.5 or 3. I was going to ask. I know you like them, but are you going to lay that number? Because that is a little bit of a – that's a larger number than I thought. I expected Maryland was going to be the favorite at
home.
Yeah,
I did too.
But I didn't – 4.5. It was 3.5 yesterday, so it's rising.
Yeah, there's that's big-time sharp money on Maryland moving it because I would bet that the public action's kind of split. Yeah, I like Maryland tonight to win this game. I think it'll be a jacked-up crowd. I think right now, the way they're playing, they're just very difficult to stop from scoring. And at home, I like them. And this is a crucial game because they are still very much in the hunt for at least a share of the Big Ten regular season title. But they got to run the table. They've got Michigan State tonight at home, at Penn State Saturday, where they've always had issues. But this is not a great Penn State team, even though they played better recently. And if they win tonight and win on Saturday, then the game next Wednesday night, a week from tonight, in Ann Arbor against Michigan will be massive. And then they close against Northwestern, who's actually been playing pretty well, and Maryland lost at the buzzer to Northwestern in Chicago. All these teams, it's just different now. You don't know what you're going to get year to year. Maryland's loaded this year, at least their starting five is, and they're the kind of team, it's one of their first teams in a while that is actually constructed almost for the tournament. Like, this is the kind of team that does well. I think 2020 would have done well, too. That was a team really built for a long tournament run because they had the guard play, they had the three-point shooting, and they had the inside ability. We'll see. It's clearly Kevin Willard's best team at Maryland, and I'm sure he'd put this team above any that he's ever had at Seton Hall as well. All right. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about it. But we ain't going anywhere right now. We'll get to this NFLPA list of rankings on the teams that their players play for. Washington has not graded well in recent years. How did they grade this year? We'll tell you next. All right, so this NFLPA report card that they do for teams is out. Washington has finished in the last two seasons dead last in the league. You get grades in categories like treatment of families, food and dining area, nutritionist, dietitian, locker room, training staff, weight room, strength coaches, team travel head coach, and ownership. And so they get graded on all of those areas, and then you get an overall ranking among the 32 teams. Again, this is the NFL Players Association, ranking the 32 teams on behalf of their players. Washington dead last the last 2 years. None of that was on Josh Harrison, the new ownership group. It was them coming into a situation, two seasons ago that was dreadful right after acquiring the team, doing their best in the first year. And now that they've had essentially, a full off season and a very short off season to fix things, they came in 11th. Out of 32 teams. Here's the overview written by the NFLPA on Washington's 2025 report card. They write, after finishing last for two consecutive years, the Washington Commanders surged to 11th overall. The Commanders' improved rating reflects how meaningful improvements to players' daily experiences can be achieved, even with physical facility limitations. I'll get to that in a moment. Key to the turnaround was the hiring of Dan Quinn, who finished the season as the number one ranked head coach across the league. Additionally, the team invested in the food program, improving their grade from a D+ to a B+. They also increased the frequency of family events and began providing daycare during home games, which boosted their grade for treatment of families, rising from an F-, that is not a good grade, to a B+. The improvement in team travel is notable, with 95% of players reporting comfortable personal space on flights, up from just 50% last year. The team's strength coaches deserve special recognition for maintaining an A rating year after year. Despite progress, however, the facility itself remains a major issue. The building is old and in need of major renovation. Players single out the locker room as the area that needs attention. When asked about what the team does best, the most consistent response is clear. They are positively changing the culture, and it shows both in the survey results and on the field. So I'll get into the specifics about the head coach in particular when we get back. Denton's got five burning NFL questions for me as well, and a lot has been said about Matt Stafford and the LA situation. Well, Sean McVay spoke about that yesterday, so we'll play some of that for you as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.